You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Cops and Robbers is a new one-man play showing at the Marsh Theater in Berkeley. It's an emotionally charged piece that delves into the details of a fictitious officer-involved shooting in Oakland. In it, you'll find a variety of characters, the pimp, the police officer, you have your conservative radio host, and the news reporter, all with their own perspectives and prejudices.
And in our communities, that violence is brought to a brother or sister near you by the very gunfire of an extremely militaristic, brutal, and racist police department patrolling our streets like the overseers patrolled the plantations of yesterday.
The play is written and performed by Genio Fajeda, an internationally known rapper who, in 2010, entered the Alameda County Sheriff's Academy and is now a sheriff's deputy in the county. KLW's Rachel Dornhelm spoke with Fajeda in our studios.
First, I'm very curious. You're an incredibly successful professional rapper who's toured internationally, and then you decided to become a sheriff's deputy. How did you decide to make that switch?
It took a lot. It took a lot. You know, we weren't just out there rapping, you know, for, you know, rapping about parties and stuff. Like, we were rapping about some social issues, and we had a lot of success. And, you know, while you're rapping about injustices that are going on in Oakland, you know, on the stage in Malaysia, you can't help but to notice that, you know, people in Oakland aren't really listening. They could care less. So that feeling was always there. When things begin to slow down with the band, you know, I kind of stepped back and said, you know, well, what am I going to do next? You know, what I'm trying to gauge was what I'm going to do next. The whole Oscar Grant shooting happened. I went to the first gathering at the Fruitvale BART station. My wife and I, Dawn, thousands of people out there. And I'm talking to different people. The recurring theme was people believe that, you know, there were police officers that exist that don't care about the community. So I thought, well, if we could magically get rid of all of these police officers, who would replace them? I looked around at all those thousands of people there, and I couldn't fathom anyone stepping into that role and filling that spot. And I knew I wouldn't do it. It took a year and a half. I said, you know what? Either I'm going to do this or I'm going to stop rapping about it. Stop talking about it.
And so it was a year and a half long process to get to that point
thinking,
to decide.
Right. Because I kept running away from it. You know, I can't be a cop. I can't do it. Well, why not? Right. And the why not was never stronger than the why I should.
So it sounds like it took a while to get to the point of deciding to go into law enforcement. What about the play, though? Was that a very quick decision writing that, or how did that unfold?
I had been in for a year and a half, 2 years. And it was right at the time when she was completing her dissertation. My wife, who's an educator, you know, and all of these conversations that we're having just reveal all of the different perspectives that are going on amongst everyone that claims they want to find a common solution. But no one is talking to anyone else. No one's listening to the other. Ultimately, I guess she got tired of me ranting and raving. And she said, well, look, why don't you write something, do some music. And I said, I can't put all these perspectives into a 3.5 minute song. So she said, well, write a one man play.
Let's listen to some of the clips from the play right now, just to get a sense of the range of perspectives that you are talking about and that you draw on. And this first clip is you playing a conservative radio show host, talking about the suspect at that point in the officer involved shooting.
You know, didn't we get rid of all you guys? Didn't the citizens of the United States of America already say we didn't want you? You gangsters that claim to be helping the black community, but were really just selling heroin and pimping women. Many of them white women, I might add.
You're laughing. I mean, vitriolic, maybe not so far from reality for some radio hosts in the U.S.
Oh, if you look up the top radio shows in the country, in the United States of America, you know, you may hear something like what he was just saying. And that's the truth. So that's indicative of where our country is.
Here's another quote. This is a minister who calls the police gangsters in blue.
They are shooting first. and leaving us to ask the questions later. Holding open target practice in our streets, amongst our children and elderly. But that is not the worst of it. Oh no, brothers and sisters, that is far from the worst of it. You see, unfortunately for us, they have been committing these atrocities in our communities for years.
How much of the issue of police brutality and injustice do you believe is fed by the systems outside the police force?
Law enforcement is an institution on an assembly line of a bunch of other institutions that can lead to the disenfranchisement of a certain demographic. I read that Michael Brown's school, the school that he went to, was nearly 100% black. So this is a segregated school that Michael Brown went to like 60 years after Brown versus the Board of Education. So before Michael Brown was old enough to get arrested, you know, education and politics and economics and popular culture had already spoken. They had already set the stage. Everyone has a part in it. The police need to do a better job of communicating and educating communities on what they can and can't do and the motive behind why they did X, Y, and Z. Because everyone thinks they know their rights, and very few people do. You know, and your rights, what you think is right and wrong, because you're a straight-A student, you're an honor roll student, and you didn't do anything, has nothing to do with the call that I just received on my radio. Now, this is something very important to point out. If police racially profile someone and it's proven, they can be held accountable. What's the penalty for an American citizen picking up the phone and racially profiling someone when they call the police? There is no penalty. And that's never discussed. And every day a call comes out over the radio of two or three or four black males with hoodies standing out in front of 1234 Main Street, and they haven't committed any crime, but they look like they're casing something, or they look suspicious, or they might have just done something. Right? Now, we have to respond to that.
So you're talking about two groups that have historically had tense relations, the law enforcement and the black community, right. And you straddle both of them. And I'm curious how you have navigated the conflict in your own life.
Well, I have to, you can't ignore that, like, for the first, you know, 300 or some odd years, like, law enforcement and the criminal justice system, as far as the black community was concerned, it only existed to enslave the black community or to make sure they were second-class citizens sitting on the back of the bus to, like, the 50s or 60s. That's a long time. That's a long time to pass down feelings and lessons learned generationally. That's a long time. But now I see that there's an opportunity for some change, right? I know the history, my knowledge of the history is just a drop in the bucket, but I know something of it, and I believe that going forward, the relationship can be changed. That's what I believe, so I'm doing what I can to change it.
We'd like to hear your thoughts on the tensions between police and your community. Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we may get your comments on the air.